I'll start with a recap of the last few days. So on day one, Steve started us off by helping us to see what faith is and what it is not. We saw that faith is confidence in what God has promised and not wishful thinking. And we noted that we will live our lives and make our decisions in proportion to our faith. And then on day two, Beth looked at the place of waiting and disappointment in walking by faith, and we saw that Sarah was defined by disappointment, and after many, many years of waiting, God redefined her, gave her a new name, and made her whole. And so we were encouraged to reflect on any disappointments that have defined us, and about how God might have us be redefined in such a way that would shape our perspective and our disappointment and our waiting. And then we saw yesterday in the story of Abraham and then Jacob, the way in which good things can become consuming idols, and we were encouraged to throw our idols in the fjord. So today I've updated the title of this session to The Substance of Faith, Choice, Action, Risk, and Failure. Choice, Action, Risk, and Failure. And we'll focus particularly on the word risk, because I'm going to suggest that risk is really fundamental to the practical outworking of true faith. And if you did look at the quiet time questions, great, thank you very much. We're not actually going to touch on the James passage, but if you've read it, it will be a helpful background to what we're looking at just now. I'm going to start now with a story of a life of faith from this book by John Ortberg, which is a very good book on walking by faith. Are you in a reading mood?
Okay.
You could go from there, the bottom of the next page. Okay.
Even in the world today, it is often at the point where we are frustrated by the gap between fallen reality and our sense of God's desires, that we are moved to action in a cause greater than ourselves. An outstanding example of this was a woman named Henrietta Mears. Miss Mears taught college-age single young people for decades at Hollywood Presbyterian Church. She was a formative influence on the life of a whole generation of Christian leaders, including Billy Graham, Bill Bright, former Senate chaplain Richard Howelson, and hundreds of others. She was frustrated at not being able to give her students first-rate material to educate them, so she began a little publishing enterprise out of a garage. It grew into Gospel Light Publishers, one of the most effective Christian publishers of its day. Henrietta was frustrated because she knew so many Christians living in crowded Los Angeles who needed some place to withdraw and be with God outdoors when they could hear him better. So she drove up into the San Gabriel Mountains and found what she thought would be the perfect location. She talked to God about how much it was needed. Then she talked to the man who owned it, and although he hadn't been inclined to sell it, he never really had a prayer. It grew into Forest Home, one of the premier spiritual conference centres in the country. Henrietta was frustrated by not having a good single volume introduction to the Bible that could help her students understand what it was all about. So she wrote one herself that sold hundreds of thousands of copies and continues to sell today, decades after her death. She did all of these things and many more, despite doing them in a day when many people thought a woman had no business doing such things. Time and again she took the step of faith, and time and again the bridge was there. At the end of her remarkable life, as she lay on her deathbed, someone asked her, Miss Mears, if you had it all to do over again, would you do anything differently? She thought for a moment. If I had it all to do over again, I would have trusted Christ more. Maybe God is calling you to trust him at some point of frustration in your life. Trust him. No one ever regretted trusting Christ more, ever.
Thanks, Tom. So it's a story, a brief summary of a life marked by faith. And actually, her life was also marked by physical illness, which isn't mentioned here. But I really just want to highlight that last line which she said on her deathbed. I would have trusted Christ more. And then what the author says, no one ever regretted trusting Christ more, ever. So remember that last line. We're going to jump back into Hebrews 11 now. So if you want to just have that passage open before you throughout this talk. So we've seen clearly throughout this passage, this chapter, that true faith is thoroughly practical in its outworking. It was by faith that these heroes of the faith did X, Y, Z. Their confidence in what they hoped for and assurance about what they didn't see propelled them to action. And you've maybe heard the child father swimming pool analogy. So there's a 2-year-old girl, and we'll call her Faith. And she's standing at the edge of a swimming pool, but she can't swim. She's only 2. And her dad is in the pool, beckoning her to come to him, to jump into his arms. And if Faith jumps in and her dad doesn't catch her, then she's actually going to die. If her dad just abandons her. And actually, it's not dissimilar to the story of Peter stepping out of the boat to walk on water with Jesus in Matthew 14. So in order for Faith to jump, she really has to trust her dad. And the risk is huge if her dad isn't trustworthy. But if her dad is trustworthy, then she doesn't really need to worry about the risk. And so Faith doesn't just say, well, I trust that my dad would catch me if I did jump, but I don't need to test this, so I'll just stay here, thanks, and I'll affirm the truth intellectually without taking action. No, we know the story. Faith jumps. And that's what we see throughout this chapter, a faith that jumps. And we see clearly that most or all of the faith steps taken in this passage were obviously very risky. So I'm just going to quickly go through some of those faith steps and highlight the risk component. So verse 4, Abel brought God a better offering than Cain did. He gave part of his material wealth to God, so of course he therefore had less. Generosity is a very important area of faith and risk. And if you regularly give away a proportion of your wealth, you will then, of course, have less material wealth. So the cost and risk there is fairly obvious. Verse 7, by faith Noah, built an ark. This is a huge risk that took many years. He certainly risked looking completely ridiculous. And he risked wasting a lot of his time and effort on a project if God wasn't faithful. And then verse 8, by faith Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. Here again, it's pretty easy to see how risky this is, setting off without knowing where you're going, just knowing that God has called you. Verse 11, and by faith even Sarah, who was past childbearing age was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who had made the promise. And again, very risky, believing God's promise that she would have a child. There would be so much risk of hurt here if the God who promised was not faithful. A lot of you will know couples who really want children but aren't able, or couples who have successfully got pregnant but then lost the baby, and you'll have seen the deep pain there. And the physical evidence wasn't in Abraham and Sarah's favor, as we discussed the other day. Abraham was 100, Sarah was 90, but she allowed herself to believe what God had promised. So she risked being deeply hurt if God was not faithful. And next we'll skip to verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. Again, such a huge risk, and not just the obvious risk of losing his son, but the risk of forfeiting or sacrificing all that God had promised to do through his son. And then jumping to verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He sacrificed his status and comfort. He risked his identity and privilege. And he took on the risk of believing this is worth it. It's worth leaving the palace, the place of comfort. And then the next verse, he chose to be ill-treated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. And giving up sin is again hugely risky. Believing that you could be more satisfied if you gave up your sin is definitely a leap of faith. And so we're really just scratching the surface, going through quite quickly. But I'll recap some of those risks just now, and then we'll think a bit more about how relatable they are. You might want to take note of which of these you've seen God bring about growth in you, and which of these risks sound scariest to you. So we had risking material wealth, risking looking ridiculous, risking wasting your time and effort on a project, risking obeying God's call when you don't know the full picture, risking experiencing deep hurt and loss through becoming attached to an idea or to a person, risking status and identity, risking privilege and comfort. And then we read elsewhere in the passage of people who risked their lives, and some were imprisoned, tortured, and killed. So one of my key hopes in sharing this list of risks and in giving this talk is to encourage you to think about the risks that God might be calling you to take, whether big or small. So what are the risks that God is inviting you to take with your wealth, your home, your time, your status, your future, even your safety? And when I talk about risks, think opportunities to fail or steps out of your comfort zone. So generally when I give talks, I most naturally lean towards talking about theology and biblical themes. That would be what comes more naturally to me. But in talking about lived out faith, taking steps of faith, I think it's important that I share a number of personal stories. So I'm going to spend most of the rest of the talk giving you some fairly ordinary examples of risks that I've sought to take, or I'm seeking to take by faith, or risks that I'm failing to take but I know God is prodding me on, just to help you get you thinking about what God is calling you to. So think about how you relate to each of these. First, the risk of apologizing. So I'm married, as you know, so apologizing has become a much bigger part of my life. It's very much true. And you might ask, well, what's the risk of apologizing? Although I suspect I'm not the only one that finds apologizing really hard. The risk is that I have to accept that I was wrong. And that's really hard because I want to be perfect, and because blaming is so appealing and so much easier, and I so long to justify myself and say, it was your fault, you were wrong, you deserved it, you're a big jerk face. But God is inviting me to take the risk of accepting that often I am the one who is wrong. Or just because the other person is maybe at fault in some way, that doesn't mean I'm therefore innocent. And I rarely get to that stage of sincerely apologizing without a time of wrestling and letting go in prayer. Then risk number two, rebuking and challenging other people. This is definitely a step out of my comfort zone. And it's definitely another aspect of relating to others where God has been challenging me to step out of my comfort zone. It's also very important in marriage. So yes, it's more important that I learn to apologize and repent, but it's also really important that I have a passion for helping my wife to grow in holiness and seeking to grow together, especially when I recognize that for Jenny and me, we're both naturally avoiders and suppressors when it comes to conflict. It's against both our natural instincts to bring up conflict points. But we've both been learning how important this is, and we've both definitely grown through this, through bringing up issues gently. Hello. A brief warning, I suggest being careful if you enjoy this. And there are certain, perhaps more prophetic temperaments that are maybe too eager to bring up faults and sins in others. Third, the risk of expressing affection, especially to my family. So although I think that words of affirmation is maybe my top love language, I'm still very aware of the weight of affirming someone, especially when it comes to my family. So when I left home to go to uni in Glasgow at the age of 18, I came to realize my inability to relate to my own family, especially my parents, especially my dad. I remember a phone call in first year, feeling fairly lonely, and wanting to tell them that I loved them, but just feeling incapable. And actually, it wasn't until 4 years later, a few months after having chosen to take Christ seriously, that I was able to say those words to my mum on the phone for the first time, I love you. And actually, my mum's a very easy person to love, but for me it was a major risk, a huge step of vulnerability, but it was also a very valuable step in our relationship and a huge blessing to both of us. And I'm still not quite there with my dad. He's not quite as easy to love as my mum, but I do love him. And I do want to express that to him, but that's a future risk to be taken. I'll give you one other recent story about expressing affection, which was definitely a fruitful faith step. So I've got a brother who's 11 years younger than me. His name is Sean. He's just turned 18, and he'll be going to university after the summer, and I care about him very much. And we get on pretty well, but I'm very conscious that for most of his life, I've lived 200 miles away. And given the age gap, he was 7 years old when I left home to go to uni in Glasgow. And so over the past few years, I've had a growing heart to be a friend and a support to him as he goes through his teens. Essentially, I want to be a big brother to him. And over the past year and a bit, I've had this dream of having him come and live with Jenny and me for a few weeks before he goes to university, so I can invest in our relationship and invest in him as a person. And I also wanted this stay to be useful for him, so I said I'd teach him some basics of how to cook and how to play chess, because he's going to study maths. And So I tried to communicate all this to him, and he seemed open to the idea. But when it came close to it this summer, I was trying to articulate the idea more clearly to him, and he said he hadn't realized how long I meant. He thought I just meant a few days. And so after that phone call, I felt a bit deflated about this, and I concluded that I needed to present my vision for the idea more clearly, and I knew I needed to express something of how much I cared for him. But as I've said, I feel the weight of that vulnerability in affirming my family members. And I also know that when I feel something strongly for an extended period of time, but I don't say it out loud, I know that when I do eventually say it, I'm going to burst. It'll be very emotional. So I knew that I needed to take this faith step, stepping out of my comfort zone by taking the risk of making myself vulnerable before my little brother. So I wrote out some things I wanted to express to him. And then I called him a few days later and said that I wanted to explain to him why I really wanted him to visit for so long. And so I started by saying, I'm very aware that you were only 7 when I moved out, and so I'd really value the opportunity to spend some extended quality time with you. And it's really important that you know that I really care about you. Although I didn't actually manage to say I really care about you, because I got as far as I really and then I did just explode. I just started sobbing, and it took me quite a while to just get to grips and compose myself and state that complete sentence, still with tears streaming down my face. And then I just repeated myself a lot and was quite inarticulate. But he took on board what I said, and he was touched, and he understood why I wanted to spend that time with him, and so he accepted my invite. And practically, it didn't work out as I dreamed. We only managed to get 2 weeks together, and they were 2 separate weeks, with a week off in the middle when he went back home. And the weather was consistently rubbish, apart from one day. But it was enough. It was really great, actually. I taught him to cook, and we had friends round for dinner each night. We tried out a different recipe each day, and I taught him to play chess, and then he beat me. But more than that, it was a really valuable time together with some important conversations, and it really deepened the strength of our relationship. And he knew that the cooking and the games and the other stuff was just an excuse for me to have time with him. And that time together was the answer to a lot of prayers, and also the result of taking that faith risk, telling him how I felt about him. And actually, I'm going to come back to this story tomorrow when we talk about faith and doubt, because it's quite relevant there also. So that's 3 faith steps God has been challenging me to take more and more: apologizing, rebuking and challenging people, and expressing affection. The 4th risk is the risk of praying for people, especially when I'm with them in person, especially praying for healing. So I'm very aware that the Bible makes a huge deal of prayer. Jesus makes a huge deal of prayer. And we have the Holy Spirit in us, empowering us. And that is pretty mind-blowing. But the truth is that I don't really like praying with other people for them, especially praying for healing, because the risk of failure seems so high. And actually, I feel fairly confident that God isn't going to heal you when I pray for you. And that's not because God can't or God doesn't do that anymore, but because my experience tells me that it's very unlikely. So I've prayed for lots of people for healing, and the results, the data, just isn't very good. Almost all of them showed no sign of having been healed. One of them even died, not whilst I was praying for him. So I definitely feel the risk of failure. But I'm aware I'll definitely not see anyone healed ever if I give up praying for healing entirely. And I do think that 1 success to 100 failures is worth the risk. So I'd say I have two success stories, but they're pretty tame as far as healing stories go. And I'll just share one for time's sake now. So I'd say it was a couple of years ago. Me and another friend had stayed late after a church service to pray for healing for this guy's knee. He was in his 20s and he'd had this sports-related knee injury that had been there for several years, and it wasn't particularly painful, but he could feel that it was still there and it did affect him. And my friend and I prayed short prayers and we did lots of waiting in silence, feeling awkward with our hand on this guy's leg. And at one point, this guy actually said that the pain felt worse. But we continued praying and eventually he said it felt completely better. And it was actually the most understated thing ever. It was probably very British, actually. He really did just say, yeah, it feels completely better. That was it. There was no dancing or anything. And then I didn't see him for several months, maybe a year. But my friend who I'd been praying with would occasionally share this story. And I'd be thinking, are you sure that that actually happened? And so when I eventually saw the knee injury guy again, this was a few months, maybe even a year later. And so I asked him about it. I was keen to hear. And I wasn't particularly optimistic, but he said that it was completely healed from that day that we prayed for it. So I feel fairly confident about that story, and that gives me hope that it's worth continuing to try, despite the many attempts that have felt like failure. Then my fifth faith risk story, risking looking foolish, or risking looking like an idiot. I think I'll not speak very much on this one because it's perhaps an obvious one. It's probably one that maybe a lot of us feel more acutely, and it's tied into a lot of the other risks, but it certainly deserves a mention. So I'm thinking particularly about evangelism, and in some respects I've come to enjoy sharing my faith more and more, but with certain people and certain groups of people I'm still very aware of the risk of looking foolish. Mika and I were talking about this a bit last night. So I recently got involved with a band, an indie pop group, and I rehearse with them once a week. So I've ended up spending a lot of time with this group of people, although I had no connection with them previously. And it's been over a year now. But they're all just slightly older than me. They all have professional jobs. I think they're all just a little bit taller than me, and it feels a bit like hanging out with the cool kids at school, whereas I was always much more comfortable hanging out with the geeks, freaks, and weirdos. So one of the band members joined Jenny and me and a group of Christian friends for a hike recently, and he was asking me about the work I do with NAVS, what it involved. And I ended up talking about how NAVS has been significant for me on my journey, particularly in enabling me to find purpose in life. But I didn't take the risk. I was hoping that it would become easier, that he would say something that allowed me to say something I knew I should say. But I didn't mention God, I didn't mention Jesus. The reality is that Christ has given me hope and joy and freedom and perspective and purpose, but I managed to dress up my simple hope in vagueness and intellectualism. So that's the disappointing end to that story as it stands so far. Although I'm thankful just that you would join us and come on a walk with us. I see that as a very small step, but I'm very aware that this is an area where God is calling me to step out and risk more, and it is a bit scary. A couple more. So sixth, the risk of putting sin to death. So we saw this in Moses, who chose to be ill-treated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. And I'm quite aware that choosing to put sin to death is a faith jump, taking a risk on God being worth it and on God being more fulfilling than sin. So I had a sort of Christian background, but throughout my undergraduate degree, so for 4 years, though I never fully rejected Jesus, I really didn't make much effort to follow him. And I didn't want to follow him. And I was really shy during those years. And I came to believe that the only way that I could truly be myself was to be drunk. Which is quite a sad thing to believe about yourself. And I also became addicted to pornography, watching up to 10 hours a week. So it was quite consuming. And I knew that God wanted to deprive me of these two sources of fulfillment. But I didn't trust that God could offer me greater fulfillment. I thought of the Christian life as the opposite of freedom. And looking back, I do see it as really sad that I saw porn and the ability to engage with friends whilst intoxicated as my greatest sources of fulfillment. I always wish I could say it was something more rebellious, like sex and drugs. But yeah, I saw these things as more fulfilling than walking with Jesus. And the idea that knowing and walking with Jesus would be less fulfilling than these things sounds absurd to me now. Anyway, eventually, after about 4 years on this path, I came to a crossroads. I had to choose whether or not to take my life seriously and commit to Jesus, or follow myself, my path that I was going to carve out for myself that was filled with apathy. And I had become fairly convinced that Jesus was worthy and that he was good. So to cut the story very short, I did choose Jesus, as is probably evident now. And it was actually a fairly immediate transformation. I really did wish that I'd made the decision so much earlier. I knew real freedom, real joy. And it's so easy to see that I was so much more fulfilled after taking the risk of entrusting my sin and my fulfillment to God. And actually, those sins really lost their attraction. It was very obvious that God had set me free. And of course, I know and have experienced that putting sin to death is not always so easy or immediate after having made the conscious decision to do so. But I know that it's always worth it. The last faith risk I'm going to mention is the risk of taking risks on people. So this is a big part of the NAV's ethos, taking risks on people. It's a big part of discipling other people, saying I'm going to invest my time and my effort and my emotional capacity in nurturing you to grow into the person that God has made you to be. Or simply just giving someone responsibility can be an important risk, an opportunity to fail. So when you delegate to someone else something you know you could do fine yourself, it's obviously a risk. Or when you ask someone to organize an event, or lead worship, or lead a small group, taking a risk on someone else can be costly, but of course the potential for growth is huge. And I could tell stories about taking risks on other people, but instead I'll tell you the story of people taking risks, or a key risk, on me. So I've just told you some parts of my story, and I told you about the crossroads that I came to, but I didn't tell you how I got there. So the story actually goes that I stumbled into NAVS at the start of my third year in university, and I wasn't looking for it, and I didn't really want much to do with Jesus at the time, but I found myself involved in a NAVS Bible study group. And I was fairly uncommitted, and I didn't contribute very much. But I did, for some reason, continue going along. But throughout that time, for about 2 years, I lived very much a double life. And the crossroads came at the end of my fourth year, having been involved with the Navigators for 2 years, when my NAVS small group leader along with the NAV staff, asked me to consider co-leading NAV small group Bible study for the whole next year, so for my master's year. And they knew that I was a wild card. They knew I was a risk. And I don't know if they would have asked me if they really knew who I was and how I was living. And I actually don't know if I would ask myself if I saw my sin. But I knew that God had orchestrated that moment. And I knew that I could only accept the responsibility of leading the small group if I was going to make the decision that I just told you about, the decision to choose Christ over my sin. So I knew I had to make that decision that summer. Was it going to be Jesus or the world? And I knew there was only one right decision to make, even though I wanted to put it off as long as possible. And I know the people who took the risk would say that it was worth it. And all of the freedom and growth in my life over the past 7 years, since almost that day, can be traced back to the risk that those guys took. And it reminds me that it's ultimately God, of course, who takes a risk on each one of us. It's God who stepped out of his comfort zone to pursue us. He took a risk on each of those great names in the Hebrews 11 Hall of Faith. Jesus took a risk on the 12 disciples, and he took a risk on me and on you. And you could say, yeah, well, but God is sovereign and he knows how it's going to work out and so on. But we know the cost that God has paid in his dedication to sinful humanity. And if I'm going to call it a risk for myself to entrust myself to the all-powerful, compassionate God and to follow him where he calls, then I think I can also call it a risk for him to get involved in our messy lives and to use us. So it would be, it would be worth spending a bit of time asking the question, why bother with a risk? But we'll not spend much time on that, as partly I'd like you to go off and think about that. Partly because I think with a lot of the risks, it's fairly obvious what potential good is. But I'll just comment quickly for now. So why bother with a risk? First, I suggest, again, it's pretty obvious with a lot of the risks. A lot of it can be summed up under the word growth. I'll just leave that there. Second, just imagine asking anyone in the Hebrews 11 Hall of Faith if it was worth it. So Abraham, was it worth it? Moses, was it worth it? I feel pretty confident about what they'd say. To quote the book again, no one ever regretted trusting Christ more, ever. And then my third answer would simply be God. Why bother? Well, it's in taking these steps of faith that we'll meet with God. So to quote John Ortberg again, the way to get to know his trustworthiness is to risk obeying him. The way to get to know his trustworthiness is to risk obeying him. So why bother? One, growth. Reason two, you won't regret it. Reason three, you'll grow in knowledge and experience of God and his faithfulness. Now, before I wrap up, I have three quick warnings about what faith is not. First, faith is not an optimistic disposition. I naturally have an optimistic disposition. I assume that things will work out fine, and I find that often they do. Whereas my wife Jenny is more naturally a worrier, and it would be very easy for me to get self-righteous and judgmental in comparing our differences. But the reality is that my optimistic disposition is a combination of nature and nurture. It's not a bad thing, but it does have its pitfalls, and it's not faith. Often it is wiser and more mature and more of a step of faith for me to take action instead of just assuming that everything's going to work out fine if I just leave it. Second warning, taking steps of faith is not simply doing stupid things. So think of Peter walking on water with Jesus in Matthew 14. Imagine Jesus wasn't there and Jesus hadn't called him to come to him. And Peter just decided to attempt to walk on water in the middle of the sea. I would suggest that that would be a stupid thing. But Jesus was there, and he had called Peter to come to him. So it was a step of faith. And similarly, faith isn't just doing the hardest thing. Don't assume that God wants you to empty your savings account, or commit to a life of celibacy, or become a monk in a war-torn country. Maybe, but don't assume. And then third, faith is not about getting God to do the things that you really should be doing yourself. So to give a quick example, I actually used to pray that my ex-girlfriend, when I was with her, I used to pray that she would break up with me. But eventually I got around to taking the risk of doing what I knew I needed to do and ending the relationship. But it would have been much better for both of us, much more helpful for both of us, if I got around to it earlier and had stopped asking God to do what I knew I needed to do myself. And also, let's remember from what Beth shared that there can be just as much, if not more, faith in the waiting as there is in the doing. But of course, waiting rarely is just sitting still. So just a quick recap. We saw from Hebrews 11 that taking risks is fundamental to walking by faith. And we considered a number of faith risks from that chapter and from my life. So we had risking material wealth, risking looking ridiculous, risking wasting your time and effort on a project, risking obeying God's call when you don't know the full picture, risking experiencing deep hurt and loss, risking status and privilege, risking identity, risking comfort, risking apologizing, risking challenging and rebuking, risking expressing affection, risking praying for healing, risking putting sin to death, and taking risks on other people. And we briefly touched on the fact that it's worth it, and then we had our three warnings. Faith is not an optimistic decision. It's not an optimistic disposition. It's not simply doing stupid things, and it's not getting God to do what you should be doing yourself. So if any one of those examples of risk-taking helps you to think about what God might be calling you to do, then this talk and this time will be worth it. And just to repeat that last line from that lady's life again, I would have trusted Christ more. No one ever regretted trusting Christ more. So we've got some questions for you to think about and chat about in your groups. First, what risks or opportunities to fail are you currently taking? And second, what opportunities to fail might God be leading you to take? And then third, are you haunted by any particular failures? Maybe even any failures where it would be helpful to share that with someone to stop it robbing. To stop it robbing it of its power. And yeah, if you are haunted by any particular failures, how have they affected you? Does anyone need a recap of any questions? Okay. I'll pray again and then we'll formally conclude this section of the day. Father, we want to give you praise for the fact that you are faithful and that you will never abandon us. Lord, thank you that we can trust you with our lives. And I do ask that you will speak to us as to what decisions or steps you might be calling us to make, ways in which we can see your faithfulness more clearly through taking a risk. And again and always, we want to entrust our lives to you, and we ask that you would enable us to do so and enable us to see where we are resisting handing ourselves over to you. We pray this for Jesus' glory. Amen. Yeah.